life gets messy. Spills, stains, and kid chaos. But with Anabe, cleaning up is easy. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you never have to stress about messes again. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Get early access to Black Friday pricing right now. Sofas start at just $699. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh, boy, wow-wee.
He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Welcome to the latest edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. My name's Lauren Wood. I join you remotely again, as we all are continuing our isolation, joined by John Anderson, Scott Gullen and Michael Warner. And Ando, to borrow a phrase from the one and only Greg Champion, footy's on, footy's here again.
Yeah, I reckon it was for me, and I'm not as intimately involved as you three these days, but Monday was the first day where I really got a spring in my step about we're going to be watching the AFL again. And yeah, I'm genuinely excited about that, and particularly that common sense prevailed and Geelong got every home game at GMHBA Stadium, whatever it's called. So, no, I'm being silly saying that. But I really am. I've finally started to get through my head. Because a lot of people, quite seriously, have lost a bit of interest. They sort of moved on. That's what happens. You can't take it away for a while, and then people will adapt to a new lifestyle. I don't know. Where were you with that, Scotty?
You know, I agree, Ando. I think we've got set in our Netflix ways, and we're sort of figured out a routine of our lives in between walking the dog, drinking wine, typing up a few stories. Yeah, we're in a little routine, and it's going to throw us out a bit. So, I'm with you. It's a good thing. I was at Geelong last week and saw them actually running around having a kick, and it does. It gets you going.
Mick, do you get excited about fixtures and who your Tigers are going to be playing over the next 5 weeks?
Look, I've been waiting for Geelong to go down the ladder for about 20 years now, and I thought that they were finally going to fall over the perch. And now, Ando, I know why you've got a spring in your step, because playing all their games at home, will they get their finals at home? If there's no crowds, why wouldn't they? Suddenly, Gazza and Selwood and Danger and the guys are back in the frame. So, well done to Geelong. It'll be interesting to see if they do get finals.
Oh, they have to, Mick. Come on. I mean, if it's not governed by fans, why wouldn't they?
I think that's right. Yes.
The AFL's backed into a corner. They can't logically say to the competition, Geelong hasn't earned the right because there's no people in the ground. It's ridiculous.
I think that's right.
How are Geelong people feeling? And I imagine they're shouting from the rooftops at this point.
Well, if they can't go, though, Loz, does it really matter? I couldn't give a stuff if it's played at Mars. I mean, if you can't be there. The only thing with that is, Scotty, you're talking about, you know, Geelong's only ever had one final.
And they lost.
And they lost to Freo, which could have arguably determined their premiership chances for that year, because they end up then playing Hawthorn in the prelim final and losing that epic game by, I think, 5 or 6 points. MCG, where Sean Burgoyne sealed it in the last quarter. But I know Freo were really happy to play Geelong at Geelong that year. Well, for Ross Lyon, it was perfect with the narrow boundaries. He was actually right, because it forced him into even more of a contested ball game. And they had Fife, Mundy, that type of player in the midfield who were big bodies, and that suited them. So I'm not, you know, convinced about Geelong with all that, the home finals, the rest of it.
That was, of course, Ando, the famous Shane McGuinness cistern press conference. But do you think a few clubs have missed a trick here by West Coast, for example, not coming to Melbourne and playing on the MCG 9 weeks in a row and getting that experience on that ground? I know they won a flag there, so they got over that issue that they had. But wouldn't it be a golden opportunity, even without crowds, to come to Melbourne for an extended period?
Does it make that much difference? I mean, GWS, you could argue that prior to beating Collingwood in the Plymouth final, their record was awful at MCG. Didn't play there very often. And it's still awful now because they lost the grand final by so much. Yeah, I don't think it's any harm in getting used to those dimensions because the wings are wider at that ground than they are, I'm going to say, anywhere else. Our producer, Damien Tardio, will correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think they probably are. But ultimately, I mean, it's just going to be such a different season, is it? So without crowds. And we'll find out how much crowd. In that round one, the one thing we all found out was that players were more accurate with their goal kicking. And it's only a small sample, but it was extraordinary how much the goal kicking improved without the crowd. So, I mean, that was one thing I noticed. I don't know what's going to happen after that.
Mick, do you feel playing the Eagles is a golden opportunity at Metricon? I mean, there's all sorts of winners and losers thrown up when it gets to fixture releases and everything, but you'd have to say the Tigers, that's a massive win for them not having to make that trip west.
Well, certainly the noise of affirmation won't be there, which Richo coined the pro parochial crowds over there. But you still got to jump on a plane. Actually, the plane travel will be interesting, won't it? It was shared. You got two teams on the plane. It's sort of, you know, I wonder if that could get Ramsgatey at some stage.
Very quick one, as I say, before we move on to all three of you. A one-word answer, please, starting with you, Ando. Will you watch the rugby league?
Yeah, sort of. No, don't know what I'm doing. I'll say no.
Scotty?
I might, because I might be punting on it. That's probably the only reason I'm watching.
Mick, you a fan?
I'll be watching, yes.
Yeah, I think I might tune in. I'd forgotten. It's been a while, Scotty, as you said, a lot of Netflix. And even just watching Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson go at it yesterday, it was sort of Tom. Just whet the appetite a little bit for a bit of live sport action. What did you make of that, Mick?
No, I love the whole out. It's been likened to the moon landing. Some people were saying that it was fake footage of Tom Brady's. It was an astonishing shot, Andrew. I don't know if you saw it, but landed sort of 5 feet from the pin.
Nice wedge.
It was a magnificent shot.
Yeah, those two, we're not talking about players not getting on, those two genuinely haven't liked each other over the journey. And that has been put on. I remember Ernie Els was playing at Royal Melbourne. I reckon, Mickey, you'll remember this, he had a 59.
Yes. That was fantastic. That's fantastic.
Exactly. Did he have a 60? 59.
No, 59, okay.
And when he was there, I reckon there were some rumours going around about Phil at the time, which I don't know whether they're right or wrong, and I'm not going to repeat them here, but Ernie got a text from Tiger as my information asking about the rumours and were they true. There was genuine feeling between those two.
I think it's thawed out a bit, though, Ando. They're now the elder statesman, and Tiger's no longer sort of worried about him being the greatest. So I think it's thawed. But I know that Scotty had a 59 at Royal Melbourne when I played with him as well on the front nine. Unfortunately.
Yeah, front nine. Yeah, that's a
good gag and an old gag, Michael. Well done.
Hey, Loz, can I ask you three something? From Monday through to Thursday, Fox Footy are going to have the televised version of the Hall of Fame this year, given the awards won't be held with the normal gala evening. So that's next Monday. We know there'll be obviously Hall of Fame members. I think six go in. But, of course, there's a legend to be inducted this year, which happens normally every second or third year. Just from you three, who do you think should be that legend? Loz, you go first.
Well, I was actually going to put this to you a little bit later, but you've beaten me to the punch. And
it got
me wondering when the email came from the AFL on Monday afternoon that they were obviously going to push ahead with the broadcast version across the four nights, as you say. And it got me thinking whether this is the year then to induct Gary Ablett Sr. Because as you said last week, everyone's basically resigned to the fact, and I think he has admitted as much, that he wouldn't go. So why not do it now when no one can go?
I couldn't agree more. It's perfect timing. So you'll be Gary Ablett. I'll go Gary Ablett as well. Senior we're talking about. What about the other two boys?
I'm with Senior too, Ando, because I figure Ablett and Carey, the two best players I've ever seen. So why shouldn't they be legends? And I don't agree with the off-field sort of hurdles that keep getting put in the way of Gary Senior. So I'm a Gary Senior.
Well, you won't believe it, but I am going to agree with you all as well.
Oh, wow.
Gary Ablett Senior is a legend of the game. The policy doesn't talk to character, does it, Ando? So, therefore, it defies logic why he wouldn't be a legend.
And he's still trying to sell his 1966 Mustang, if anyone... yes,
put the price down.
He's keen to... It's in working order, he tells me. It's just really in a garage that he talk to.
There you go. If you're in the market for a 1966 Mustang, get in touch with the Herald Sun Footy podcast. Jack Stephen obviously returned to the club, obviously discharged from the Alfred Hospital last week after his stabbing. Returned to training yesterday, if you could call it training, walked laps again this morning. But I think you would have to agree with me here, Mick. The biggest story to come out of the Jack Stephen story has involved Collingwood president Eddie Maguire, hasn't it? Wanting the full story from Geelong. Neil Mitchell weighed in on 3AW. Here's what he had to say about the saga.
Don't anybody accuse Eddie Maguire of hypocrisy, although he's behaving like a world champion hypocrite at the moment. Don't accuse him of a conflict of interest or anything like that, because he will go feral. After all, he's untouchable Eddie. I'm intrigued he thinks Geelong should tell all. 10 years ago, several Collingwood players spoke to police after a woman alleged she was sexually assaulted. Now, they weren't suspects. I want to make that very clear. They were not suspects. They weren't accused of anything wrong, but police thought they might be able to help with the events that allegedly unfolded at a function where they'd been present at one stage. Anyway, the Collingwood club kept their names quiet, wouldn't tell anybody, I believe threatened media who released them that they could be banned from going to training. Well, I got the names and I broadcast them, and Eddie went after me, accused me of a disgraceful act, publicly, a disgraceful act. He said what I did was irresponsible and possibly illegal, and then the cliche, of course, a shameless grab for ratings. Eddie talking about a shameless grab for ratings. Anyway, he took after me, which is his right. Jeff Kennett and Andrew Demetriou supported him, and I was public enemy number one for a while with football. All fair enough, and years ago. In fact, so long, it seems Eddie's forgotten. He now demands Geelong answer everything about Jack Stephen, which when he took precisely the opposite view when two Collingwood players were named. Hypocritical, inconsistent, illogical. From Eddie.
Now, in typical fashion, Eddie's gone back again on Triple M this morning. Here's his reply.
My point was the same thus on Friday as it is now, which has been misreported, and especially yesterday maliciously by that over-puffed up windbag on 3AW, Neil Mitchell, who uses things again, at his own volition. What we said on Friday, and we say here today, is if you're not going to get asked the question thus that is pertinent, don't put the person up in front of the media, whether it's the coach or the player itself. Otherwise, the journo's there to ask the questions that are the most pertinent in a situation. It's not for them. If he's right to answer the questions, put them forward. If you're not, you don't ask him.
Now, Mick, I'm just going to hand this one over to you because it's rolled on and on and on. I know you probably – I don't know if you're wanting this handball or not, but it's become a saga in itself, hasn't it?
Well, I think a lot of people fell off their couches on Saturday when – Eddie said that Colin Carter was guilty of the greatest conflict of interest that he'd ever seen when he went from the commission table to the Geelong boardroom. And I could immediately think of 20 conflicts that Eddie Maguire had been involved in that were bigger than that. But he doesn't take criticism well, Eddie. I think that's one of his problems. He's got one of the glassiest jaws in the game, and he just couldn't take the criticism, and now he's got Neil Mitchell on his back, and good luck with that one, Eddie. But yeah, it's been a little bit unsavoury, and that's always been the problem. He wears so many hats.
Where he gets in trouble, Loz, is we understand. I've got no issue that there's times when he's a media personality and there's times when he's Collingwood. I get that. But the problem here is the double standard in that if this is Collingwood and opposition clubs or people are going, oh, tell us the real story behind Dane Beams. He'd be going, private matter, club's dealing with it, go away. Yeah. That's exactly what the Jack Stephen thing is. Yes, there's police involved, but it's a private matter that they're still working through. So that's where he gets in trouble. Not that he can be the media in Collingwood. I get that. But it's just the double standards on when it comes back at Collingwood.
Well, he also said this morning, Scotty, that all the journos who went down to Geelong and didn't have the guts to ask Jack Stephen who stabbed him weren't doing their job right.
Oh.
And the chief of staffs would be disappointed, you know, in their look, he did have a crutch thrown at him by Tony Lockett, so he obviously got, he was a, you know, a front and centre journo. But
yeah, but that's a stretch. Seriously.
Were you there, Scotty? I mean, why didn't you?
I wasn't there at 8 a.m. when he walked in, Michael. I just missed it, unfortunately. Traffic from Bowen Heads.
Strange to think, isn't it, that if he's not talking to police, which we understand he has since done, he's going to front up to the cameras waiting out the front of the club and just tell them who did it. It's just a bizarre argument, isn't it, Mick?
Yeah, it is. And, puffed up windbag is not something that I'd be calling Neil Mitchell.
No, I wouldn't have thought. Just another quick one for you, Mick, on the conflict of interest front. I was really interested in your story in the Tuesday Herald Sun with Tamsin Manu, of course, Olympic athlete, calling out a conflict of interest of Eddie's own with Athletics Australia. There's been much feedback.
Yeah, Tamsin Manu, Nee Lewis, a great 400-metre runner. Well, there's a lot of bad blood still or ill feeling from people in the athletics world about the way that athletics was treated back in 2008 when Collingwood took over Olympic Park and had it demolished and built into their own little training ground there. Eddie McGuire, of course, was on the Athletics Australia board as well as being the Collingwood president at the time, and there was claims of conflict of interest, and I think they're pretty clear. And I think that there's a lot of people involved in athletics in Victoria, and Scotty, you know all of these people that feel as though their sports never recovered from what happened there. They got shunted down to Albert Park, which from all reports is a very ordinary place to run. And Victoria lost its status as a place to have international meets. Olympic Park was bulldozed and became a training ground for Collingwood, and there are many people, including Tamsin, and good on her for calling it out, that think that it was a massive conflict of interest at the time.
No doubt. I mean, I remember Eddie coming on the board and was like, oh, this, you know, big man about town, athletics needs some exposure. But then it quickly became apparent why he was on the board. And I think if you did a little check of how many meetings he may have attended, they'd be minimal. And the president at the time, Rob Fieldies, happened to be a mad Collingwood supporter as well. So Eddie being Eddie managed to get the government and everyone aligned, and poor old ass community lost. Yeah, you're right. I mean, at Olympic Park, Kathy Freeman broke 50 seconds for the first time there. It had some amazing memories, and it was very sad to see it go. And Lakeside Stadium, the wind, it's all built the wrong way. You can't run fast there. So, yeah, all along, the ass community's felt, you know, slighted.
I reckon the last time a world record was broken in Australia, Scotty, might have been at Olympic Park when Emma George broke the women's world pole vault record.
Yeah, that sounds right. She was doing it every second week for a while.
She was. And then, you know, I've got boys, as you know, who run. They've run at both places and both far preferred Olympic Park. Lake Oval, or Albert Park as it's known, is built near two lots of water. You got beach and you've got the lake. And when you got water, you've got wind. So if you're racing there, 9 times out of 10 there'll be wind of some description. And athletes would rather run at Box Hill or Doncaster where there's an amphitheatre type situation. So the track's actually set down and it's between suburban housing. So the wind's not such a big issue. And over 10,000 metres, they would run about 20 or 25 seconds faster at those suburban tracks. So it's a major issue. People don't want to come from overseas, and some of the famous people who ran Olympic Park since it was built in 1956, just the biggest names in world athletics. That's a real shame. And look, Tamsin, in her comments to you, Mick, I thought she chose her words really carefully, and it was clever the way she put it. And she did say good on Eddie McGuire for looking after his footy club, which is what he always does. And once he was on Athletics Australia, we probably should have realised that's where Ed would have been heading, and he did it very, very well for his club. But conflict of interest, yeah, I mean, as you said, Mick, it's pretty obvious that that was the case, but that's Athletics Australia were weak. They were weak.
And, yeah.
Definitely. What do they stand? What do they stand for? Athletics Australia, seriously, I'm just, that oval, it's not open half the time. I mean, athletes can't get on to it to train when they want it. They should be charging athletes $2 a head, and that money would be well spent in developing junior athletics or whatever. But you just can't go down there any time of the day and train. It's not that easy. So it's a bit of a farce, unfortunately.
Mark Robinson, of course, the chief football writer of the Herald Sun, and his piece on AFL Women's in the Monday Herald Sun, the untouchables, as it were, regarding the cuts to the game and whether they should extend to AFLW. Did you catch that one, Ando?
I did. I read Mark's comments. So who was Taylor Adams has had a crack at him, has he not?
He has on the tweet machine today.
Yeah, which is Taylor's right. I mean, that's what happens in the world these days. You know, Robbo's expressing his view, and I think Taylor is suggesting that Mark might have been writing what he thinks people wanted to hear. Is that fair?
That's a suggestion from Taylor, but it was a piece that took in quotes from a senior AFLW coach. So it's Haas' views too.
I love the design, how big Daniel Harper's head was on the design of the page. That was the first one. But I get what their point is, you know. Don't just slash AFLW because you've got to slash everywhere else. But I think it's unrealistic to think it's not going to get a shave. I mean, the whole economy is getting shaved. So I don't think the AFLW world can expect to front up in November. When do they start training and things to be all as is?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. They're firmly focused at the moment on the VFLW competition because these are all women. They pretty much play year-round. So they're pretty firmly focused on that. At the moment, but I don't know. I think to cut it completely, which Robbo was suggesting was being put to him by a few club people, and push it back for an entire year, that seems a bit ridiculous to me. It seems like it was a bit, maybe, you know, a lot of people see AFLW as an easy target, and given that it's the sort of last element of the game to get a seat at the table, that maybe it should be the first to go. But no, I thought Haas' words were really powerful. He's obviously got a front seat to it, and even he said he didn't realise the impact of it until he got involved. So, no, it certainly set a cat amongst the pigeons, that's for sure. Just before we
Lauren,
get to the whisper.
Just on that, Lauren, though, the elephant in the room, if you want to talk cuts, to me is the Gold Coast Suns, which is the $250 million project that has been an unmitigated failure. So that's probably where I'd be starting if I was in a Razor gang. I'd be asking questions of that organisation way before AFLW.
Are those questions being asked? Are you aware?
I'm not sure that they're specifically being asked, but I think the pressure's going to come to bear on a lot of these underperforming clubs and their administrations over the next couple of years. Kennett alluded to this. And I've done an interview with Peter Gordon for tomorrow's paper where he also talks about how there needs to be some accountability from clubs at the high end of the handouts. And, of course, no one's been higher up that queue than the $250 million Gold Coast Suns. So what's interesting there as well is that they've got 51 players on their list. That's way easily the most in the competition, and yet you've got the AFL saying they want to reduce the list to 35. So there's 16 Gold Coast Suns players being shown that. I'm not sure that that's the solution of fixing Gold Coast.
I'm happy to have a go back at Mick at times, as you other two know. Mick, just to give the other side to it. But when I look at the Gold Coast, Mick, I'm trying to think of one positive, one real benefit that has come out of that club's existence to date.
Well, they won a Brownlow, and three of them went to Richmond and played in the Premiership last year.
Yeah, okay. So they trained up. Some good Tiger players.
So you agree? I mean, I know.
I agree with you. Yeah. No, I can't. I can't not. I don't know too many sane people who wouldn't agree with you. It's right. If you're looking at world sport, and you're trying to think of a bit bigger unmitigated disaster in the last two decades, there'd be harder to find one than the Gold Coast Suns.
But isn't the AFL committed, you know, broadcast, Gill's dug his heels in, you know, they're going to keep propping them up. Isn't that the reality?
Okay, Scotty. No, good point. So that's one thing that they would argue, that by having an 18th team in the competition, it has expanded the broadcast rights, and you wouldn't get $1.2 billion as we got without 18 teams. So that team had to come from somewhere. What Michael would argue, and I would agree with him, does that team have to be on the Gold Coast? Why can't it be based in another part of Australia, so, i.e. Tasmania?
Tasmania, yeah.
Actually, Ando, I actually like the Gold Coast as a place for a football club. I just can't get over the mismanagement of the club from day one, starting with the list build and the financial commercial side of it. I mean, Giants have been a phenomenal success because they had the C-word culture from day one. And it was Sheedy, who everyone laughed at, who set that in place, saying he was too old. But the difference between the two organisations is astonishing. But I actually believe in a team on the Gold Coast. I just cannot believe the lack of scrutiny that comes on the waste of money that it is.
Sheedy and another premiership coach in Mark Williams, who is equally as zany as Sheedy, but I've got no doubt had a big impact in terms of establishing culture at that club. Whereas you had Guy McKenna, who I think you would all know Guy McKenna as a person, and he's one of the better blokes you meet in the football industry. And he could well have been a very good coach, but surely he needed someone like a Kevin Sheedy, that type of person with him from the start. Because Bluey McKenna was a first-time coach at that time, and he would be a better coach if he went around again now. But he needed the experienced people around him, and he wasn't given those people.
No, it's not the Suns' fault. It's the people who put the club together's fault of what's transpired.
One to watch this space, and I'm sure your eyes will be very firmly on the Suns in the next couple of years, Mick. As you say, Jeff Kennett's put it firmly on the agenda that 3 years should be the litmus test for these clubs to pull their weight, as he put it. So we'll certainly be keeping a close eye on that. And also on your piece with Peter Gordon in tomorrow's Herald Sun. I'm looking forward to sitting down with my coffee as part of my new routine, as Scotty mentioned, our weird ISO routines that we've got. Scotty, the Super Score rolls on. The fixture, as it is always, not only in the score but also in the Super Score, is the Whisper. What have you got for us this week?
Well, I think we're all, you know, the AFL's back now, which we're excited about, and we're all waiting to see what the next league's down, the flow-on effect. And the mail is that July 12, Sunday, July 12, the biggest junior league in Australia, which is obviously in Victoria, is going to pencil that in and say, right, we're not going to wait for everyone else. We're going to get everything in order and we're going on July 12th. So I think it might be a flow-on effect. Ando, do you know more about what AMOs and other sort of leagues, where they're heading?
So the one you're talking about there, Scott, is the Yarra Junior Football League, which has obviously a huge number of junior clubs who play on Sundays, and women's female clubs as well. A lot of girls play in that particular competition. So they're front foot. They're as you just said, then they're wanting to go ahead. And if it doesn't happen, well, at least they will have given it and been ready ahead of some of the other leagues who seem to be waiting. AMOs, I can tell you, a week ago, I would have said 20-80 against. That's from an outsider. As of last night, I would have said about 70-34. So I think the AMOs have made huge leaps and bounds in the past week, and at this stage would be on track to play early July. Of course, a lot can happen. Suburban leagues, the VFL's a competition, which to me will look more different than any other competition when it comes back next year in its entirety. As for this year, it's still very much an uncertain situation. Suburban leagues obviously got the problem with paying players. And as such, I mean, some of them are, is it Heathcote? I think Boz has already pulled the pin on the year, the Heathcote League, and some other, you know, suburban leagues are looking at that as a country club. So they're very much of an unknown. The Amateurs in a better position where they don't have to actually pay players. That landscape's changing all the time, but probably looking more positive for some competitions right now than it was a week ago.
Why has there been such a great shift, Ando, to go from 20-80 to 70-30? That doesn't just happen overnight.
That comes from Daniel Andrews, actually, probably set in the standard for that. And as measures tend to get relaxed, and you can have more people training together. So I think as of now, it might be two groups of 10 at the same oval. That may be increased to two groups of 20, which means obviously 40 players. And then the expectation is that there'll be larger gatherings allowed, 50 people, 100 people, and an amateur footy club that would allow them to potentially have a lunch or aftermatch where they sell their grog, or more importantly, their finals where they charge spectators to come in. And they probably charge them up to, I think, $20 a head, and they make a fair bit of money out of that. So that is really important to them to get those numbers still through. So they gets to 100 in September when they would have their finals typically. That would help enormously. So, yeah, it's I think at the moment they will play, but that can change if Corona has another outbreak.
Yeah, I think the gatherings is the big one. I mean, it's one thing to turn up, play, go home, don't touch anyone, wash your hands, all the rest of it. But, that's not what local footy clubs are about. We've all been part of them. We've all spent a lot of time at them. And it is the gathering that seems to be at the heart of the Mando. So you're right there. It's all hinging on what the government does, but things look to be opening up pretty freely at the moment. Fingers crossed we can get a local footy season started. Our friends at localfooty.com.au have been absolutely all over this. Planned resumptions across all the different leagues, so you can obviously keep up to date. You're sampling the best, better than all the rest,
better than anyone. Away from Tigerland, a fighting fury, we're from Tigerland. In any weather, you will see us with a grin. Risking head and shin, if we're behind, then never mind. We'll fight and fight and win, for we're from Tigerland. We never weep until the final siren's gone. Like the tiger of old, we're strong and we're bold, for we're from Tiger, yellow and black. We're from Tigerland.
And I'm going to hit you up again, just before we get going. For your best of the best Richmond team, you've been doing the best teams of the last 50 years from 1970 to 2020, slowly working his way through one per week. And Mick, he's turned his eye to your Tigers. And
has he done his homework, Michael? Has Michael got his team? Are we?
I had a look at his team. I had a look at his team this morning, and I could not pick a fault with it.
That's surprising.
Mick's feeling very just sort of
loving everyone.
Worried
about him. Actually, what's unusual? It's unusual that you guys are showing so much logic today. I'm my normal self.
Well, the hard thing with Richmond is how much credence do you give to the last 3 years where they've obviously won two premierships and made an prelim final the other year. And so players like Dylan Grimes and Shane Edwards and Basha Hooley, where do they fit in to the last 50 years? And that's what I found difficult. But I ended up going, because the club was so successful in the early 70s, obviously, in that period they won three, I reckon. Yeah, they no, two, sorry, 73, 74, and then again in 1980. Kevin Sheedy in the back pocket wasn't a hard choice for me. Barry Richardson at fullback. Barry Richardson was good enough to play at either end of the ground, but he played some really good footy in the early 70s at fullback. Dick Clay has to be in the 18 for mine. Started his career as a wingman, went back, really good, versatile footballer. Merv Keane, the halfback flank, four premierships. Merv, again, picks himself. Alex Rance has to be in the side. I've got him at centre halfback. He's probably more comfortable at fullback, but he can do either role. Francis Burke, well, he's in the AFL team of the century, I think on a wing, but halfback, fullback wouldn't matter for Francis. Trent Cotchin, I picked on a wing, part of the midfield group. Trent has to be in the 18 for mine. Trent's a different footballer now than he was early in his career when he won, I'm going to say, three out of three BNFs, Mick, I reckon. Trent Cotchin and a Brownlow medal, of course. Jeff Raines in the centre. He got some good sentiment at Richmond. You got Jeff Raines, Ian Stewart, and Maurice Rioli. Stewart and Rioli ended up putting on forward flanks. They could both play on forward flanks, as Ian Stewart did for a time at Richmond. Brian Wood on the other wing. Some would probably have someone like maybe Wayne Campbell or Matthew Knights in that group somewhere. I've got those two fine players on the bench. Matthew Richardson, Ford Pocket, has to be in the 18 picks himself, moves so well he can run up and down the ground. Jack Riewoldt, full forward, ahead of Michael Roach, just. Dale Waite in the other pocket, clear choice. Michael Green in the ruck, brilliant player in the early 70s. Michael Green, Dustin Martin, ruck rover. Kevin Bartlett, rover. Levy, Matthew Knights, Michael Roach, Wayne Campbell, and David Cloak, who could play forward or ruck. On the bench, unlucky, Brendan Gale, Jimmy Jess, Edwards, Grimes, Hurley. Yeah, that's probably it. But if I got Mick Silver approval, I'm very happy. So I can rest easily now. Thank you, Michael.
No, you know that. And those other guys have got their parts of their career ahead of them, Ando. So time will tell if they can get into your team in the next couple of years.
Grimes. Fantastic.
Grimes is the one I thought of hardest, I reckon.
Yeah.
I really like him as a player. But and I've put him in, he's got a winery, hasn't he, Dylan Grimes? I was thinking I might head up there and he's given me a few bottles, but I haven't tasted his produce. I haven't tasted his grape.
He does have a winery, Ando. You're right, Mount Macedon Winery. Restaurant, cellar door, weddings. They've just completed the 2020 harvest a couple of weeks ago. So I can give it another couple of months and you can head up there, sit on the balcony and maybe enjoy a drop and talk through the team with Dylan.
I'm going to do that in 3 hours' time. I'll leave it until 5 p.m. Loz. I'll try and get through the five.
Fantastic.
That's ambitious, Ando. Five.
Is it? I'm just a bit worried.
The days are getting shorter.
It's only Tuesday, Scotty.
Yeah, so no, we got a day off.
It's not Monday.
where are you looking next week, Ando, for the best of the best team?
That will be St Kilda.
We will have one very pleased listener, actually. I meant to say earlier, I meant to send you a text. We got a message through from one of our listeners, Jasmine, who is an avid Saints supporter and a very loyal listener of the podcast when she runs. So I'll have to message her back and let her know that her beloved Saints are going to be next week. How's it shaping up?
Tell Jasmine to pick her own side and she can compare it with the one that I came up with. How's it shaping up? I'm going to have Tony Lockett at full forward.
Stuart
Lowe set up forward. Stuart Lowe set up forward. Danny Frawley, probably, I reckon, Spud will be at full back. He's certainly been in the side, I know that. Trevor Barker, half back flank. You sort of think, Harvey Ruck Rover. Nathan Burke, maybe back pocket or rover.
All right. Don't give the team away okay. A week early. We'll leave you to it. We've finally, the countdown is on, boys, to footy's return. June 11 is the day. We've got the fixture. All of the news is really heating up as we look towards footy's return. It's only a couple of weeks away. We absolutely cannot wait. Thank you again, all of you, for joining us from your respective backyards and lounge rooms and wherever you have come to us from, and wherever you're listening, make sure you keep up with all of the news at heraldsun.com.au and in the paper each and every day. We will see you next week.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.
Owning a home is full of surprises. Some wonderful, some not so much. And when something breaks, it can feel like the whole day unravels. That's why HomeServe exists. For as little as $4.99 a month, you'll always have someone to call. A trusted professional ready to help, bringing peace of mind to 4.5 million homeowners nationwide. For plans starting at just $4.99 a month, go to HomeServe.com. That's HomeServe.com. Not available everywhere. Most plans range between $4.99 to $11.99 a month your first year. Terms apply on covered repairs.